Welcome back to the Purple Menace Podcast. Billy Wessels, Clint Foster. We got a big show today. Big show to talk about today, Clint. But before we get to that, we got to get to our bigger guest of the week.
Yes.
Austin Schlotman.
Your greatest 51 of all time.
Yes. Austin, how you doing, my man?
I'm good. How about y'all?
Doing good, doing good. How are things going up in Denver?
They're good, man. Just trying to stay safe, staying in the quarantine when I can, getting some workouts in, you know. Nothing what? Too crazy.
Staying beefy.
Yep.
How's the beard right
trying
now?
Trying to. So yesterday I got a haircut, but yesterday it was the longest it had been, the messiest it had been. I was calling it my quarantine beard, but I had to get that shaved off. And Beyonce's driving up today, so I figured she wouldn't like that too much.
Got to keep her entertained, huh?
Right.
Well, Austin, so you've been with the Broncos a couple of years now. What has been the biggest difference in your life since you've gotten the call from Denver?
You know, I mean, the paychecks aren't bad, but other than that, I mean, it's I'm having a great time, man. Playing football for a job is something I always dreamed of, and I'm blessed to be able to say I can do. And really, just kind of being around the guys, being around some of the coaches, some of the people in the building who have made a name for themselves on and off the field. Just kind of getting to learn from those guys has been huge. Not just football, but life lessons. Everything like that. It's been great, man.
I'm sure John Elway and Peyton Manning for bosses aren't too bad, huh?
Yeah, Peyton's around sometimes. Don't see him as much as John Elway, but Mr. Elway's great. Everybody else, it's awesome.
Well, you know, Austin, we've been going through and naming the greatest TCU athletes to wear every single jersey number, and obviously you are our 51, as I mentioned. That's why we got you on the phone. So awesome. How do you feel about that, being the best 51 of all time?
It's pretty crazy. When y'all got in contact with me, I really wasn't expecting anything like that, but it's an honor, and I appreciate it.
Like other guys before you, Kenny Kane, Robert Henson, before your time, obviously, but have you met any of those guys before?
I've met Robert Henson once or twice. I don't know about Kenny Kane though, but I've heard a lot of stories about those guys, and they were great players.
Kenny's another great guy, another friend of the podcast. We've had him before. So I mean, what's it like trying to block Von Miller?
Very difficult. Let me say that. Luckily, I don't play too much tackle. I did a little bit rookie year for the scout team, but. I mean, it's a great learning experience, either like playing when he rushes inside, playing guard, or if he's coming around on a twist. He's slippery, man, and he can bend like Gumby. So it's good. It's a good learning experience. I figured if you can block him when he's doing something like that, you can pretty much block anybody. So,
true story. What was your first start? Because you got your first start earlier this past season. What was that moment like for you?
That was amazing, man. It was in Houston, so as y'all know, I'm from Brenham, so that's about an hour and a half from the stadium. So I had a whole bunch of family there. A lot of friends came down. My grandparents got to come be on the sideline for warm ups. It was awesome, man. It was a blast. We got the win too, so a little icing on the cake.
Who had more family member or friends there? You or Cortland Sutton?
I'm pretty sure it was. Pretty even. We could have probably filled up a whole section with the amount of people we had there, but it's awesome, man. It was fun to be able to play down there.
What was it like? Again, I followed both of those recruiting very closely. Sutton was a guy I was begging TCU to offer for the longest time. Obviously, he went to SMU.
Me too.
Yeah, crosstown rivals, obviously. But what was that like, playing against one of your best friends for playing with him in high school, against him in college, and now teammates again?
I mean, it's incredible, man. You can't really... That doesn't really happen very often. So, I mean, we obviously stayed in touch while we were in the DFW area playing against each other when he was at SMU. And then when I got the call from Denver, I sent him an old picture of me holding him up in the end zone in one of our high school playoff games. I told him we would get to do that more often now. And he was fired up. We were both fired up. And it's been great, man, having somebody like a familiar face in the locker room when you get there. It definitely helps.
That's awesome. Well, Austin, your senior year in 2017, I feel like that was one of the best, if not the best, offensive line collectively that TCU has ever put together. What do you think it was about that group of guys, you, Patrick Morris, that made y'all so effective?
Well, we had been, that was our fourth year together. Obviously, some of those guys had been, that was their fifth year together. And we kind of, that off season before, kind of made up our minds that we wanted to be really good at running the ball and play collectively as a group well together. And we just kind of went out and did it. Our Coach Thompson, who came in as the O-line coach that year, helped a lot. And yeah, we just kind of made up our minds that that's what we wanted to do that year, and it actually worked out, and we had a pretty good year.
I think there are 11 TCU offensive linemen on pro teams right now in camps and stuff like that. What does it say about the program you came from?
I mean, I'd argue that it's O-line U at the moment. kind of, and it's a lot of guys who came in, kind of like myself, not as highly recruited, kind of got to work, and that's the credit to the coaches and the strength staff and everybody who we worked with there that helped us get ready for that, for this moment, pretty much.
One of the things I like to ask former players, and it's funny, Big V, I asked this question to you a couple years ago. What's tougher, practices at the pros or practices in college?
Definitely at TCU, without a doubt. I think mentally it's a little bit tough, just because the playbook's a little bit more dynamic and there's a lot more moving parts and stuff that goes on. But physically, it was definitely college.
What's been kind of your favorite, looking back in your TCU career, what was kind of that top moment? What's been the best thing you can remember?
You know, the Alamo Bowl, when we played Oregon, was definitely one of the top moments. That was just insane, and will be in the history books for a while for that comeback. But that was great. Just pretty much just playing with the guys, you know. Those were those become your best friends when you get to when you get into college, and to be able to go out on the field and be successful with those guys was a blast.
What, I mean, going back to that Alamo Bowl game, 31-0 at halftime, what are y'all thinking in the locker room?
You know, we just kind of, we're trying to figure out what was going on. Got a pretty good pep talk from Coach Phillips when he came in, kind of telling us about how TCU finishes games, how they used to do it back, like, when he played. And we just went out there. Bram had a half for a lifetime, went out there and was playing out of his mind. And we just somehow ended up with a win, man, just whatever way possible.
The purple shirt works.
Right, yep, purple shirt. What was he was wearing black in the first half, right?
So yeah.
Black shirts. Yeah, no more black shirts.
Surprised you don't go full Mighty Ducks and everyone else change their jerseys or whatever.
There's got to be a rule against that.
Man, yeah, that was sure. That was what, your third or fourth game, like, as a starter, right? It was like your third or fourth start?
Let's see. That would have been, like, fourth start.
That's crazy, because I think your first, I think your second start was against the Oklahoma game that year.
Yeah,
too.
That was the first start at center, and we didn't really know going into that game. It was, Joey had kind of tweaked his knee earlier that week, and he was going to try to play, and he went out for warm-ups and did one pass set and was like, I can't go. I was like, all right, well, here we go, let's do it. Went out there and tried to play.
What was that atmosphere like? And is an atmosphere like Oklahoma, is that tougher than any, like, NFL atmosphere you've seen so far?
You know, looking back at it, I was so focused on trying to make the correct calls as a sophomore with guys like Big V and all of them in there. You don't want to let them down. So I was so focused on that and trying to do the correct thing that, looking back, I don't really remember how crazy of an atmosphere that was. But definitely the next couple years, or when we played there, what was that, my senior year, it was a pretty crazy atmosphere. And in regards to the pros, I mean, we played in Green Bay this last year. That place was nuts. I mean, Lambeau is one of the coolest places, I think, on the earth with the history and stuff that's been through there. And I'm trying to think, I guess the Vikings probably the loudest place I've been. But definitely those Oklahoma games, those UT games, the Baylor game, when we had that shootout, what was it, 63-58, that was definitely a loud one. There's definitely some good crowds in the Big 12.
Yeah, I'm just going to choose not to even remember what game you're talking about there.
Oh, I know.
Austin, there's been no shortage of off-season TCU news so far to keep us busy while we have no sports. I mean, most recently, right, the Zach Evans commit that was so huge, and all the coaching changes.
That's huge.
I'm really interested to hear your take on Jerry Kill and Doug Meacham now coming back and how you think that's going to impact the team moving forward into next year. You see it as a positive or just kind of whatever?
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll definitely find a way. That's kind of how TCU is. They'll find a way to put the pieces together to be as successful as they can. I'm excited about Max. I think he looked good for a freshman, and will definitely have time to develop and work into that long-time starter role, which I'm excited about. I haven't gotten a chance to talk to Coach Kell, right?
Yeah, Jerry Kell. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't gotten a chance to meet him or anything, but I think having Meach back is good. He brings kind of a swagger to the offense and an energy that only he could bring. So I think it'll be good. I'm excited to see kind of what goes down.
How do you think the offensive line is going to shape up with some new starters coming in?
I think they'll get them ready for sure. I think Coy had a good year last year. I watched him quite a bit at center. I think he's kind of taking over that leadership role, and he'll get the guys going. And I think they'll find a way.
Have you seen the rumors about week one possibly getting switched from Cal to Alabama?
I have heard about that. I'm excited. I hope that does happen.
Do you wish like you were still playing for a game like that?
Yeah, I mean that would be awesome. Especially just the competition level is obviously a little bit higher when Alabama's on the field, and that's good. That's a good way to get your name out there. You go play well against them. That's gonna be good for a lot of the young guys.
Another thing I wanted to ask you, and this is a little bit kind of backwards in topic, I'm talking about training right now and training the off season. Did it take you time to get used to training at an altitude at Denver?
So I came up here. I trained here right after the season for our pro day. So I came up and was actually working out at a place called Landau Performance, and Lauren Landau is the guy who runs that. He's now our strength conditioning coach. He got the job while I was training. For pro day here, he got the job for the Denver's head strength conditioning coach. I was up here training. I kind of got used to it. It does take a little bit. Takes about 2 weeks to feel normal, I guess, going down to Texas after the season and coming back here. You never like that first week. It's never fun, but it's not bad. It's cool.
So you went there. You went to Denver after your pro day at TCU before the draft and everything.
After the season to train for the pro day.
Oh, okay.
So I came up here. Yeah, I kind of wanted to get away, just kind of be on my own, focus on what I needed to get better at. I think it definitely helped me a lot.
So did that lay...
Go ahead.
Did that lay some groundwork for you getting picked up by the Broncos?
I would like to think so. I'm not sure. I don't know how much say Coach Landau has in that process, in the draft and free agent process. But I mean, I'd like to think so. He's been a great, great coach, great mentor this whole time. So I would like to say that he helped me get my foot in the door. But I guess that maybe or maybe didn't happen. I don't know.
It's not a bad thing. Looking, the NFL schedule came out what a week or so ago. Have you had a chance to look at that and circle any games on the calendar?
You know. The way I look at it, the first one's the most important. Kind of the next one's kind of a cliche. I learned from Coach B, but it's definitely true. You're only as good as your last play, and I like to focus on the next one that's up. So we'll be working on those preseason games. Hopefully, we'll get to play those. Nobody really knows how the season's gonna pan out with all this stuff going on, but. Just the first one, honestly, and then we'll move on after that.
How weird would it be for you if y'all ended up playing in empty stadiums?
It would feel like training camp. I mean, kind of like those. We had those joint practices every year, or the last 2 years. I don't know if we'll do it this year. But, it's kind of like that. You're going against different competition, people you haven't seen during training camp, and there's no one out there, so you just kind of – you got to do it for the love of football, man. It's not – you don't got a crowd there to hype you up. You just got to do it for the team, do it for the love of the game.
I mean, even at Brenham, you probably had monster crowds most games.
It was pretty loud. We filled the stadium for sure.
Like, y'all made the state, what, finals or the semifinals a couple times there?
We went to the state finals my senior year.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the furthest. My senior year was definitely the best playoff year we had.
Yeah, I just looked up y'all's schedule. I mean, I know you said the first games was important, and that's great and all. But obviously Patrick Mahomes twice. But you get Tom Brady and Drew Brees this year too.
Yep. Yeah, it'll be fun. It'll be some good competition. It'll be interesting. Get a couple of those big games at home. I know Tampa Bay's at home. I'm not sure about the Saints though. That's a little bit later.
Yeah, y'all get the Saints at home too. It's in Denver.
Yeah, so that's good. The crowd here is, if we do get a crowd, it'll be in our favor. So.
Yep.
How pumped were you to see Lucas Niang go to the Chiefs, stay in the AFC West with you?
That's awesome. We'll get to see him two times a year. I mean, I think he'll do great wherever he's at. I mean, obviously the Chiefs got a good one. He's a great player. He's got a good head on his shoulders and really wants to be the best on the field. So I think he'll do really well.
Awesome, Austin. We'll let you get back to training. But do you have anything you want to promote or any, like, fundraiser, anything you got going on, the Broncos have going on this offseason?
I'm not really working on anything yet. Just kind of just helping out your local communities in this time. Help out the small businesses. If they've got some opportunities for you to help them out, I would definitely do that just so they can stay afloat in this crazy time.
Well, I'm definitely supporting your dad's cooking videos on Facebook, too, by the way.
Yeah, everybody needs to tune into that. Don Schlumman on Facebook. Fridays, he's got a cooking show, and all of those recipes are good, man.
Helped you become an NFL offensive lineman, so.
Oh, yeah. Definitely helped me get a little bit bigger.
Who's the better cook, you or your dad or your mom?
Oh, definitely my dad. My mom can whip it up, though. She's good. My dad usually takes the kitchen. That's kind of his thing, so.
Whenever I do talk to your dad, he's always bragging about making something for you or you eating, like, all the Thanksgiving dinner and stuff like that. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they came up here for Christmas. It was the last week of the season, and they came up here and cooked for a few of the the offensive linemen. We were all in my little one-bedroom apartment with a bunch of food, and we definitely destroyed all of it.
Awesome, man. We'll catch up soon, and we'll talk to you later. All right, thanks, you, Austin.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Thanks, Austin.
Have a good one. All right.
Man, that 2017 offensive line, I just went and looked it back up because I was like, I got to remember exactly. That line was nuts. I'm going to read off the names. Left tackle, Joseph Noteboom. Left guard, Austin Schlotman. Center, Patrick Morris. Right guard, Matt Pryor. Right tackle, Lucas Niang. Every single one of those guys is in the league roster. Right now.
Yep.
That is insane.
TCU offensive line, no question. They can debate DBU, wide receiver U, RBU all you want, but TCU's offensive line, U.
Absolutely.
And maybe soon RBU?
Yeah, maybe.
Making a case now with a five-star.
Our first five-star recruit, man. Can you even believe it? And of all times for it to happen during a worldwide pandemic.
Yeah.
And after signing day.
But here's the thing, though. I don't know if I'd want it any other way.
Yeah.
One of the most curious recruitments ever was Zach Evans, obviously taking us all kind of by storm earlier this week by picking TCU. He signed with Georgia back in December, but silently. Then Georgia let him out of it by February, the actual signing day. He just kind of was floating along. I'm gonna give Chris Gardner credit because he called me the other day to talk about this. He did ask me back in February. He goes, "Dude, what's up with Zach Evans?" Like, oh, he's gonna go to Georgia. Just flippantly, he goes, "I don't know about that." And I was like, he called it 3 months ago.
Huh.
So Chris Gardner, Christradamus, I think he wants to come on the show next week and brag about it. So hopefully we'll get that next week with him. But we wanted to get Austin on today to talk about number 51 and share his memories and his time. Because Austin's just a great dude, if you couldn't tell by listening to that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So. For sure. And we'll talk more about Zach Evans a little bit later in the show. I guess we should probably go with our numbers right now.
Well,
right?
I was going to get into Evans.
Right, oh, okay. Well,
but
yeah,
I just wanted to, because we didn't quite thank Austin enough.
Yes.
Right after that ending, because we segued so naturally into Zach Evans.
Yes.
So I just wanted to go back. Well, we're just playing a game of Frogger. We're back and
absolutely
forth.
I'm just trying to read you, man. I'm trying to follow your lead here.
No, it's a tough book, I'll tell you what. But Zach Evans, so what does this mean, do you think, like, for the program?
Dude, it's huge. I mean, you've automatically got three of the best freshman backs. I mean, has to be three of the best freshman backs in the nation all there at the same time who are going to compete for carries, and every single one of them can be a game breaker.
Yeah.
Zach Evans is a coup, not only for this team for the next 3 years, at least, I'm assuming, because, I mean, you look at his tape. He's been compared to Adrian Peterson for good reason.
Yeah.
Dude literally looks like Adrian Peterson, or like Eric Dickerson a little bit, just the way he runs straight up right and runs through more, and around guys.
I personally see more Dickerson watching his tape than Peterson, but I don't. If you say he's Adrian Peterson, I'll sign up for it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, it's just Adrian Peterson, Eric Dickerson. I mean, somebody was sharing Herschel Walker highlights on Twitter the other day. I was like, oh, that kind of looks like Zach Evans, too.
And this one, like, ooh, he's a great running back. Looks like Zach Evans.
But, you know, just how he runs straight up, he can run you over, he can run around you. Just a tremendous skill set. He can catch the ball out of the backfield, which is one of the things he mentioned drew him to TCU. Yeah. You know, cover your ears, Parker Fleming. He said he loved our offense.
Yeah. So. Well, he's A, they're going to say that no matter what school they go to.
Yeah,
but,
for sure.
But B, I think this gives you another toy to work with. And it's not like he's going to come here and to just be a halfback dive guy. It's not going to be that every single play. And getting a five-star talent anywhere is a great thing.
It's an amazing thing. Are you kidding me?
Again, 20 years. 20 years of rivals rankings. TCU had never gotten one of these.
Yeah.
And so it's unbelievable. Like, it just, I'm so excited for this season and pumped for what it could be. And seeing a new face like this and what he can be. But that's not to knock Darwin Barlow and DeMarcus Foster.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Like, again, like you said, it's a very talented all freshman.
It is a stacked backfield. Yep. Stacked. And when you consider Max Duggan's running ability. Yep. I mean, I think it was Shahan J. Roger jokingly said, TCU should run the wishbone. I'm like, well.
I don't hate it.
But, yeah.
But no, I mean, it's just another weapon. And he can do, like, Zeke catches passes. Dalvin Cook catches passes.
Mm-hmm.
Why the heck can't he go out and run some routes and catch some passes?
Well, Danian Tomlinson caught some passes, if you'll remember.
He also threw some passes.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, like this is the kind of athlete that can do everything and take an offense to the next step. We have a Twitter question later about what he adds as far as wins and losses to the season. And as far as a freshman goes, I think, A, the first game of the season, we don't know what that could become.
Yeah, who are we playing? Maybe that,
but I think maybe it adds a win somewhere, but, like, looking at the schedule, Oklahoma State already has one of these in Chuba Hubbard.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're basically getting up there and you're getting weapons to compete with the Oklahomas and Baylors and Texases and Texas Techs and everyone else. I don't know. I think it's nothing but a coup.
It's another incredible piece to an already really, really talented young team with a very high ceiling. So, you know, yes, it's hard to quantify wins above replacement for a freshman. It's hard to qualify wins above replacement for a football player anyway.
Yeah.
But, I mean, heck, it makes me that much more excited about 2021, man.
Oh, no, 2021 is going to be ridiculous.
Yes.
If it's not, I'll be the worst call of my entire life. And I've had some bad calls, but that'll be a doozy if 2021 doesn't go well. But think about an offense that's going to have three more years of Max Duggan, Quinn Johnston, Zach Evans, two more years of Tay Barber.
And Darwin Barlow and DeMarco Foster, assuming that one of them, you know, knock on wood, doesn't enter the transfer portal.
And that's another thing. It wouldn't shock me if one of them did.
But you know what? I mean, back in my day, we had Ed Wesley, Wayman James, and Matthew Tucker, all almost the exact same age, and they're at the same time. They shared carries. Everyone was happy. And all, well, let's see. I guess Ed didn't get drafted. None of them got drafted, but Tuck played for the Eagles for a while, and I want to say Wayman got invited to a camp.
I think he did.
But anyway, you know, they still had a chance to shine, you know. Yeah. And to me, if I'm a running back, you don't want to be a bell cow running back anymore in college football. That's just going to shorten your career, ultimately. Yeah. You want to have enough carries to where you can flash your potential, you know, as part of a good offense. You can get the attention of some NFL scouts, and then, like, okay, now give me, you know, 15 carries a game once I'm in the league, fine. Yeah. You know, but you don't want to shorten your career in college.
Well, but that's the beauty of if it being in college. A, you don't have to pay them. But B, quote unquote. But in college, like, you're a running back means more in college than it does in the NFL.
Yeah.
It's exponentially more valuable to have that the talent difference is so much more from week to week than you have in the NFL.
Yeah.
So I think it's a big boost. And if you can get him and you start maybe not getting five stars every position, but you get a couple more 4 stars every year. And this recruiting class already had 6 4-stars.
Yeah, man.
And added a 5-star.
Well, and recruiting, I say it all the time, it's a very inexact science. You know, Coach B talks about paper tigers for a reason. And we can look back through recruiting and see, oh, this 4-star didn't pan out. But let me tell you something. When they pan out, they really pan out, man. Yeah. And TCU is known for how well we develop players and get guys who have a chip on their shoulder and want to come in here and work. I think that Zach Evans is coming into literally the perfect situation for him. You know, people want to act like he's a problem kid. I think that's really overblown. I don't see any real evidence of that.
No.
But if you're coming into Coach P's discipline first team, I mean, it's only going to be a positive for you.
The sad thing is, I think he's a quote-unquote problem because he's black. Like that's just the knock on people. Like nowadays, it's like, oh, he's got an issue. It's because of that. And people don't want to sit here and look at the facts and look at everything. They're so quick to judge that they're like, oh, well, he's got an issue. He's a problem because of this. I'm like, I'm not. No one's going to say that, of course.
Yeah.
But it's a slight prejudice that most people have.
It's literally just people saw that he got suspended a couple times for really weird stuff, from what I understand. And also that his recruitment has been so unorthodox.
Yeah, but Terrell Pryor did the same thing, what, 10 years ago?
Yeah, yeah. And also, I mean, you know, Zach Evans was also dealing with a really unique circumstance where he lost his grandpa, who was really like the dad in his life, at a time when he's under such intense pressure to try and make this huge decision that's going to impact at least the next 3 years of his life, if not beyond that. And, you know, as somebody who's, you know, lost my real father and my more true father figure even more recently, it's difficult. It's a difficult time, period, but especially when you're trying to navigate something without really any guidance from that person. When his mom was really just like, hey, that's Zach's thing. He's going to do whatever he wants to do. You know,
oh,
it's difficult.
Oh, and then we're going to throw a global pandemic on
yes.
in the middle of you trying to make it the biggest decision of your life.
I think really played in our favor.
100%.
I mean, when you can't take your visits to half of these schools that are really chasing after you, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, what school's close to home that's, you know, semi-competent? TCU? Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, check them out.
I think it definitely played a factor, and I think it definitely helped. I just think there's no legal issues here.
Yeah.
It's just some 18-year-olds being knuckleheads, and if you show me an 18-year-old that's never been a knucklehead, I'll show you a liar.
Heck yeah, man.
So, I mean, he'll come in, he'll be great, he'll help TCU immensely this year, and like we said, for the next 3 years, 2021 and 2022, looking spicy.
Mm-hmm.
Looking real spicy for TCU.
With delicious meatballs of seasons.
And so, like, could this create a pipeline?
Dude, let me tell you what.
From North Shore?
That'll be our second North Shore player now on this team from this dynasty that they're building down there in Galena Park. You can go ahead and sign me up for a North Shore pipeline, man.
Yeah, they go to the state finals every other year, it seems like.
Yeah.
Keon Stewart, obviously, is the other current frog on the roster. Could be starting cornerback this year.
Yeah.
He'll be fighting Little Tomlinson for the reps there across Noah Daniels. Of course, Noah Daniels has never been fully healthy, so one of those guys, both those guys could be starting this year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Evans. Looking at 2022, there's a cornerback, also a five-star. Name is Denver Harris.
Yeah.
I'm starting to get real happy, real excited. There's no real reason to be. I'm just like, ooh, let's go get him too. Just because it's fun to recruit at this level. And if you don't see the fun in recruiting five stars, you're dull. Probably not fun at parties.
For sure. Well, and you have to think, you're probably not fun at parties. You have to think that Zach Evans now coming to TCU, even if it's just subconsciously, it kind of gives permission to the other four stars whenever TCU comes calling to give TCU a second look. Because, you know, you have to wonder how often all these five stars that we've been in on, the Baron Brownings and, you know, that kid who ended up going to Auburn, the offensive lineman, those are just the first two that came to mind. You have to wonder if at the back of their mind they're like, TCU, you know, they're in the Big 12, but they kind of have that, you know, mid-major, quote-unquote, stink on them a little bit. Like, I don't know if I'll get the same exposure. I don't know if I'll have the same chance to play in the league. But now, Zach Evans has kind of broken down that Berlin Wall a little bit. Yeah. And getting two players drafted in the first round, and the most players in the Big 12, and the most players in Texas, helps a lot, too.
Like I said earlier, you're an offensive player who wants to come play for a team that has put 11 offensive linemen in the NFL the last 12 years or whatever.
Come on, man.
Yeah, it's absurd to not want this to be a team they want to come play for. And like you said, I think that's a good point there with Evans, quote-unquote, gives permission, but he's like, says, hey, five stars can come here. And if he becomes the next Adrian Peterson or Eric Dickerson or whatever, LaDainian Tomlinson, I should have just gone with that one first. But, like, if he comes into one of these guys and becomes, like, a Heisman candidate or whatever, like, that'll open the door even more for these guys.
Yeah, I had an Aggie friend of mine start texting me that day that Evans, the news broke and everything, and he's like, so is number five technically retired? Or I was like, well, LT, you know, technically he can give permission for someone to wear number five, but, I mean, I feel like he'd have to prove himself first.
Was he five in high school?
LT?
No, Zach Evans.
He was
like three or six.
Yeah, he was a single digit. Yeah, I'm not entirely sure.
I'm like, man, I wonder what his. Ooh, I was like, what's his number going to be?
Yeah.
Can I get that jersey yet?
Yeah.
What's happening now? I don't know. It's crazy. But speaking of A&M like fans and stuff like that, I couldn't imagine being a kid and wanting to go to an LSU or a Bama after seeing how much hate Zach Evans was getting that afternoon from A&M fans, from Florida fans, from Georgia fans. I'm like, my goodness, man.
Dude, Marshall Newhouse said it. Like, recruiting Twitter is like a dark, seedy place.
And I know Twitter's bad. Like, Twitter overall is my favorite app, and my girlfriend yells at me all the time for being on Twitter, but like, it's a trash place.
Mm-hmm. And part you don't have to look very hard.
No. It's not fun to be at most of the time. So, but man, these kids, and it's like, cool, you made the biggest decision in your life, and then three quarters of the people are hating on you.
Yeah. Don't tweet at Croots. Don't do it. I mean, you have to do it because it's your job.
Well, no. The thing is, I don't tweet at them saying hate.
Yeah.
I tweeted them like, follow back, please.
And
like stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I'm basically trying to be, I mean, as impartial of an ambassador for TCU as I can be. Like, hey, good luck on your decision.
Uh-huh.
If it's TCU, please let me know ahead of time so I can be ready.
Yeah.
But like, whatever you got to do, like, I'm not saying you better come here or else, but.
That's just some nonsense, man. I mean, let people live their lives. Like, come on.
No, it's the least people can do, but I'm excited for Zach Evans. I'm excited for this offense. I'm more excited for this season. Now I just hope we have one.
I'm just so excited.
And I'll be even more excited, honestly, if week one turns into Alabama.
Man. Okay, are we going to talk about that now?
Segue. We're doing segues today.
Yes.
Clint, segue.
Okay, so Billy wants Bama.
I want Bama. I want Bama bad. Now, here's the thing is, yesterday on ProBonus.com, I broke down basically the starting lineup. And I'm like, Bama, I read an article from BamaChronicle.com or whatever it is to get an idea of who they have coming back.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, they don't have Tua. Cool. I know they still have Waddle and the other wide receivers. They're both going to be first-round picks this year. I was like, maybe they lost a lot on the line because I know they lost, Wirfs
mm-hmm.
for the first round?
Tristan Wirfs.
He's the only offensive lineman they lost. Great. Or Wills. Jedrick Wills. They only lost one offensive lineman. They bring back all four offensive linemen.
Mm.
Their defensive line's a little suspect. They bring back two starters, both a defensive tackle, which is still an important position but arguably less impactful and in some ways, in defensive ends.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, okay, maybe that gives an edge there. And I was like, ooh, linebackers. There's Dylan Moses and then a couple of unproven guys with him. And Dylan Moses missed all last year. But then I was going through the roster. Oh, that guy played a lot. And you forget that, like, sure, these guys only played in, like, six games or whatever. But they played, like, halves of games because everyone out.
Yeah.
Their backups have so much playing time. And still put up monster stats as backups. I'm like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
And, of course, they're all 4 and 5 stars.
Newsflash, Alabama is Alabama.
Yeah, maybe you've heard of them. No, but here's the thing. I still want to play them, and I get the fear of getting injured. And I think most people fear the injury, and they fear solely for Max Duggan.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Like, that's the one injury that everyone's most afraid of.
Can you imagine the nightmare? I mean, and I didn't Sean Robinson get hurt against Ohio State? No, I wouldn't have taken that Ohio State game away. But.
Well, no, Sean Robinson got hurt against everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, banged up all the... He got hurt against Texas Tech the first time he played.
That's true.
So, I mean, okay. he was not... Like, he was fragile. Duggan doesn't appear to be fragile.
That's true.
We saw a lot of hits from him last year. Again, a little bit of inexperience from their linebackers, a little bit of inexperience from their line. I'm like, maybe. Now, I don't think TCU wins. I'm not that crazy. But I want to play them. A, exposure. B, if you want to beat the best, you got to play the best. Like, if you want to beat yourself in this, if you want to view yourself as a team that can get 5 stars every year, you got to play against people that have 5 stars every year. Oklahoma's nice, and Texas is nice, but neither of them are Bama.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and we've been clamoring for, again, I want to, at some point in my life, 60 years or whatever left, I want to see, and I know we should have had it a few years ago, a home-and-home with LSU.
Yeah.
I want to go see TCU play.
I would love that.
Yeah. I'll play them 2-1. I'll play them 2 games there for 1 game here.
Mm-hmm.
I would just want to go see a game at Death Valley with TCU. I want to play these games. And this way, you don't really have to travel, A, if fans are there at all, but B, I probably get to go. Essential.
That's true.
30 minutes down the road. And you're playing them here. I don't know. I just... How many times can you say, ooh, we played Bama? And how many teams can say they beat Bama? Not many. Again, I don't think TCU would win that game, but I think it'd be close. Now, they've blown out everyone they've played in these first round, these week one Chick-fil-A games.
Because it's usually like Duke or Louisville or somebody.
Well, they spanked Duke, which is a basketball school. Mm-hmm. They spanked Louisville. That was their first year without Lamar Jackson. If they had Lamar Jackson, maybe that would have been more interesting.
Yeah.
They beat Florida State. Florida State was only 24-7.
And like ended that dynasty.
Well, yeah, they pretty much killed when they killed Francois, which is the nightmare scenario.
That is what is driving, you called it fear. That is what is driving a lot of that sentiment.
That's your fear, is Duggan getting hurt against this defense. But I just think being on this stage is so good for the brand.
Sure.
Going to the Rose Bowl playing Wisconsin was great for the brand. Beating the Panthers of Ole Miss in the Peach Bowl, great for the brand.
But if you lose to Ole Miss in the Peach Bowl, is it as great for the brand?
Well, I mean, obviously not. If you lose to Wisconsin, it's great for the brand. No. But I think given that Rose Bowl win needed to happen. That needed to happen for the brand. Peach Bowl, you could have seen them be quote unquote let down after being number three all year, them dropping and being, well, that's the SEC excuse for not mm-hmm. playing well in bowl games. But like, I don't know. I think it's just be so important. And hey, Patterson wants Saban.
Oh, he has to win. Well, and I love that Coach B has never shrunk from a challenge. I love that all of the tweets I've seen from players are like, oh, yeah, give us Bama. We want Bama. I mean, like, I love that. Yeah. I love to see that confidence from my team. But, counterpoint, we are comparing, when we talk about, like, the Rose Bowl and the Peach Bowl, we're comparing high-profile bowl games that two of the best teams in TCU history got to because they were experienced and really, really talented. In a developmental year, when you've got a super-duper young team, do you want Alabama the first week? Not a team that you're playing in a bowl game because you've had an amazing season, you've proven you're that good.
But that's...
You need a team. This team is developing. This team is learning. They're going to be breaking in a, if not totally new offense, at least an altered offense, all right, and continuing to grow. They need wins that are going to build confidence. I don't know that you, if you play Bama close, if you lose to Bama, you know, 35-21, I don't know that that's necessarily a confidence-building performance, plus, God forbid, somebody important gets hurt. You know, I think that there's the risk reward. I mean, sure, if you win, it's amazing. Like, I didn't, going into the 2005 Oklahoma game, I was driving up there talking to my friends, like, hey, if we kick a field goal, let's just go ballistic. Let's be really obnoxious. Like, we don't have a prayer. Like, that was the attitude going in. Team had a different attitude. Obviously, we won, and it was incredible and huge for the program. If we beat Alabama with this incredibly unproven team, it would be huge for the program. But give me Bama, you know, give me Bama in 2021 in the opener when we're not trying to grow and learn.
2021, they'll be playing in the national title game.
Well, and see, there's the other thing.
but this year, a counterpoint to your points you just made.
Okay,
a brand new offense taking them by storm.
That's
Jerry
true.
Kill and Meacham coming in. When did TCU last take the country by storm? 2014 brought in Meacham and Cumbie. And just changed everything. No one saw that coming. So have Kill and Meacham throw in some new wrinkles, some new stuff, and boom, suddenly you're a different offense. And B, like, Bama's still learning who they are in week one. They're not Bama yet. They're still Bama, and they'll still be ranked, I'm going to guess, two in the preseason, maybe three. I'm guessing it'll be Clemson, Ohio State, Bama in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah,
as 1, 2, 3. So they'll be ranked high. They're obviously incredibly talented. But they don't know who they are fully yet. They don't have Tua anymore. I get Mac Jones played like 3 or 4 games last year. Mm. Oh, and by the way, they did bring the number 2 player in the country into that class of quarterback. Mm. And maybe it's a game where he comes in and lights the world on fire. Or maybe TCU's leading at halftime and they go national title game and bring him in off the bench. I don't know. But
yeah.
I don't know. I think TCU plays – they play well in these big games. They play close with everybody. Like, after last season, seeing them lose 6 of those 7 games by 6 points or less, including at Oklahoma – including Texas, including Baylor.
Yeah.
I think they can play, even these young guys who were even less experienced last year, can play with anybody.
Oh, no. We're a lot better than the vast majority of the country gives us credit. But we're still going to be extremely young. And I will agree with you that if you're going to sneak up on a team like Alabama or like an Oklahoma in 2005, week one is the week to do it.
Yeah.
When you haven't no one's exactly figured out who they are yet, that's the time to catch somebody by surprise and beat them and upset them. But... you know,
counterpoint to the counterpoint.
I mean, and don't get me wrong. Like, if this was to happen, if we end up playing Bama in week one, you better believe I'm going to be hyped. I'm going to be there with bells on if they're going to allow us in the building, you know. But I just have a lot of trepidation hoping for that to be the scenario.
You don't want to – I don't know. I have a hard time
– yes, in my heart of hearts, I want to upset Bama, but that's not a sure thing.
No. I just want to play him and see him as a measuring stick. Like – Ohio State, we were so confident after that game, like, as fans were.
Yeah,
and I get Sean.
But I was also really pissed. Like to me,
should have won that game.
I don't like Sean moral victories.
Sean Robinson handed that game to Ohio State.
Yeah.
Like I don't know if that was a gift on the way out or what, but Sean Robinson was not
quite literally
handed that game to Ohio State. So, like, I don't know. I choose to be optimistic. I choose to not run from a challenge. I want Bama.
Okay, when you say run from a challenge, now I feel like personally attacked.
I'm just saying you're running from a challenge. The number three team in the country.
I'm just trying to say let's pump our brakes on we won.
Man, I want
to
go beat Northeastern Oklahoma Arkansas University real bad week one. Man,
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about like, hey, let's play Hawaii, who was a 10-win team last year, who you know is like a game that you can win and will build confidence, or like BYU, like Cal? Let's play BYU again or Cal. Yes, that's a perfectly good week one game for this team in the situation that it is in, that is young, is trying to find its identity, figure itself out, grow and develop. Like I mean, and like I say, if it happens, cool, I'll be excited for it, but I have a hard time wishing for it with our team in the situation that it's in. If it was 2015, give me Bama, you know, week one, give them to me. If it was, you know,
next year,
if it was next year, yes, when we've had another year of development for this extremely young team. But I just have a hard time hoping for it in 2020. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, I hear your points.
Yes.
I'm also going to call you a chicken.
Oh, come on, man.
No, I think giving, if they decide that this week or by July 1st or whatever, you're giving Patterson 2 months to prepare for an opponent.
I mean, yeah.
And you think he's not already preparing for that opponent? You're crazy. You think he's not already? He's got his left eye on Cal film, his right eye on Alabama film. He's ready no matter.
That's
what.
Quite the mental picture.
it's what he can do.
Yeah,
he's T-1000 or whatever.
He's a chameleon.
He's here to win football games.
Yeah.
Him and Saban are the two winningest coaches with at least 150 wins.
No, it would be. Okay, I would be excited about it if it happened. And the matchup of Coach P and Nick Saban is amazing. But also, like, I was really pumped to play Ohio State. And then I'm like, man, I'm just ticked that we're playing them in a year when we're breaking in a new quarterback and, you know, all this stuff. Like, I would be much more... Yes, I was like, after we lost to that Ohio State and the way we did, I was like, okay, we can still have a really good season. So that gives me reason for excitement. But I was super, super pissed that we lost to them because... They had it coming. Well, we should have won it, and like they needed to lose to us. They really deserved it. After 2014, after Little Sisters of the Poor, after all that stuff, they needed to lose to TCU, and they didn't. But I would be equally pissed because of the whole Saban versus Patterson, and like because we can prove something. I'd be pissed to get Bama in a year that our team is not quite there yet, and we lose. You know
that we don't know this team yet.
Yes, I know, but I mean, this is all conjecture.
But what else are we going to talk about right now in the pandemic? There's nothing else to talk about. That's why I wrote several thousand words on it yesterday. I was like, you know, I'm going to spend 6 hours working on this.
Yeah.
Because I was like, you know, I'm intrigued. Just because.
We've obviously talked about it already for as long as we've talked about it.
It's a very worthy topic. We spent 15 minutes with Austin. We spent like 27 talking about this.
Yeah.
And Evans, of course. But yeah, man, I think at the end of the day, so if you can pick one game to start year with right now, Cal or Bama, what are you picking?
Like, regardless of outside circumstances?
Right now, in 3 months, they're playing one of these two teams, Bama or Cal. Which one do you want to
pick? I'd much rather play Cal this year. I'd much rather play Cal because it's a game we can win, we build confidence, we continue to grow up young players.
I want Bama.
Give me Bama next year.
I want Bama.
Okay.
I want Bama in the playoffs next year.
I want that too.
I don't think it's the playoff team. The only chance you're getting to play Bama this year is right now.
Yeah,
unless they somehow go 9-3 and TCU goes 9-3 and they meet in the Liberty Bowl or whatever.
Unless TCU does shock the world and is good enough to beat Bama and goes like, you know, 11-1,
14-0 or whatever, or something like that, and they're in the playoffs and they play Clemson or whatever.
Yeah,
they beat Ohio State this year.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't know. Maybe I'm an eternal optimist. I consider myself a realist, but whatever.
I'm optimistic too, but I feel like I've had the much more realist take on this particular issue.
I don't know, man. I'm not saying we're gonna go out and beat Bama. I just want to see what happens if we play Bama.
Sure.
And I hope no one gets hurt.
Well, yeah. Well, I hope that every game, right?
I hope that every game, but that's the fear with Bama. But it's still a physical game.
Yeah, the fear with Bama is you're playing these like, you know, freaking behemoths who are all 5-star recruits who will sooner knock your head off than look at you.
But do stars matter? We'll get into that next time. All right, but while we're talking about big games, let's go ahead and get to the Peach Bowl thing. The greatest uniform of all time.
The people have spoken.
The people have spoken. Peach Bowl wins.
You know what, man? I was a little bit surprised to see it win by such a large margin.
It won by a big margin.
But that is a beautiful uniform.
It is a beautiful uniform. No, there's. I think most people thought the finals would be Peach versus Rose. Like, I'm not shocked at all by that.
Oh, no.
The two biggest wins since the 40s in program history. The two moments that even younger fans remember. Like, I'm not surprised that was the final. Those were the final two jerseys left. I was surprised it was that big of a blowout. You're right. But, I mean, it was great. It was a fun experiment. We're trying to come up with more things to do something like this on in the future.
Yeah, yeah.
Keep an eye on Twitter the next couple weeks.
For sure. Yeah, that Peach Bowl uniform. And take note, I mean, my homies in the TCU equipment room, let's wear white, purple, white way, way more than we do. Because I loved it when we wore it against Pine Bluff. We wore it against Pine Bluff this last year. I thought it looked really, really good. Let's break it out a few more times. Because that year in 2014, the one year we wore that exact combo, we wore it for multiple games.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone remembers Peach Bowl, but we wore it against Iowa State. We wore it against Samford. West Virginia was on the road that year. There was like at least three other games that we wore it for. Yeah. So bring it back.
Bring that look back. So congrats to the Peach Bowl players. I know players of the team were very excited they won that one, too.
Yeah,
so.
And thanks to everyone who voted. Like, it was really gratifying.
Thousands of people voted.
It was really gratifying because I worked really hard on that bracket.
You did work really hard on it.
And it was really cool to see people be so invested in it, and it was cool to see how it played out. And it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, good. Again, we're going to work on something like this in the future, so keep an eye out. Or if you have fun bracket ideas, let us know. I'm looking at like baseball jerseys now. I'm looking at basketball jerseys now.
Yeah.
Probably separate brackets and maybe just kind of a 1-16 type of situation. But some other stuff like that. But we're talking like best game day foods. We're talking best items at the bookstore.
Yeah.
Just think like favorite professors. I don't know.
I've thrown out the grand tournament of hatred, you know, where we talk about which teams we hate the most.
Yeah, no, go ahead and throw it out there because I want to get other people's ideas because I like it, but I think it's going to be really complicated.
Yeah, it would be. It would be. Especially if we're breaking it because you suggested like each like year team. So like 2014 Baylor.
It's 2014 Baylor versus 2010 Auburn because Cam Newton kept TCU out of
the Right.
Or 2010 Texas getting that second back on the clock.
Yes. Or 2009 Texas.
Whatever it is.
In 2010, they won five games, and it was beautiful.
Texas is back.
Vastly underrated TCU memory is, there used to be the Texas co-op there in Montgomery Plaza that was a Texas store, which was like, what are you doing right by TCU's campus? And some brilliant folks went up and hung up a 13-0 is better than 5-7 purple banner on the side of that store, comparing TCU and Texas for that season.
Oh, man. Texas is back. And then Michael Jordan laughs.
Yes. That was brilliant.
All right. Yes. Whoever did that. The internet was undefeated. All right. Into the numbers.
So
51. We can just skip that one.
Yeah. Well, we talked about Austin Schlotman's year 51. Obviously mentioned Kenny Kane and Robert Henson. One more honorable mention for you, though, that deserves to be mentioned is Connie Sparks. Okay. Connie Sparks was a fullback. He was also a defensive end and a punter on that 1938 National Championship team. And he was all Southwest Conference. He was really one of Davey O'Brien's go-to guys out of the backfield. So Connie Sparks deserves some recognition.
Yes.
I want to give it to
him. But Austin could still take him in a fight.
Probably. Especially because Connie Sparks is probably dead. I would hope that Austin could win that one. 52, I've only got one for you. Michael Keithley.
Okay.
All right. LT liked to talk about his big uglies, the guys who blocked for him up front. Well, Michael Keithley was one of those guys. He was an offensive tackle on those LT teams, and one of the big reasons why LT was able to get 406 and do all the things that LT did.
Well, he was all whack 3 years, too. Like, he's not a schlub. He's... was one of the best in the conference for 3 years in a row. So.
Oh, yeah. Dude absolutely deserves to be your 52. I'm just saying he's like the only one. He's really the only one worth bringing up, honestly. Okay, 53 for you. Another one that I don't have any honorable mentions to speak of, but Max Eubank.
Okay. Let's give Zach Evans one of these numbers, by the way.
Zach, 53?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It's always weird when a lineman has like a single digit or double or like a number in the teens.
Yeah, let's give him 76 or something.
That's fine.
Or 77, like Luka Doncic.
Yeah, I'm fine.
Let's go for it. But Max Eubank is your 53. He was a center for TCU from 1948 to 1950. He actually played in front of two of TCU's great, great quarterbacks. Talked about Lindy Berry last week. He was one of them. Gil Bartosz was the other one. who Ray McCowan came in and replaced when he got injured. We talked about Ray McCowan being the original Bram Kohlhausen. He was also team MVP in 1950. Your center was your team MVP. Yeah, so
that's how there good you go. The team was.
Yeah. Well, center was a very prized prized position in 1950.
So 54, when I saw the names, I was like, how was it not Lee Nalen? Like, Marcus Mallett, Clint Gresham, obviously great. Clint Gresham's a friend of the podcast. I was like, Lee Nalen was great, right? And then I read the bio on our number 54. I was like, oh, yeah, it's obviously him.
Yeah, yeah, he's a big one. So you mentioned it, Billy. Lee Nalen, Marcus Mallett, Clint Gresham, probably the greatest long snapper in TCU history and an amazing human being. Hugh Pitts is another one. He was All-Southwest Conference linebacker and center for TCU. But James Cash, this is a name that if you don't know it, now you know it because you need to know it, all right? He was the first African-American signed to an athletic scholarship at TCU and became the first African-American basketball signee in the entire Southwest Conference. Yep. So huge trailblazer. Everyone talks about Jerry Levias at SMU being a huge trailblazer for the African American community. Well, James Cash is equally so from a basketball context and at TCU. He was an amazing rebounder. He led the Frogs in boards for two straight seasons, ranking fourth for a career total of 856 rebounds. That was 11.6 rebounds per game.
Yeah.
And,
He's probably, I think he's been passed a couple times
this was
in 2010, I think. I think Brodzanski might have passed him, and Kenny also might have been around there too. But yes, what James Cash did, obviously not just for basketball, but for like
America,
essentially, for the Southwest Conference, at least for the South at that time.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Even more impressive.
And I mean, you know, he was an All-Southwest Conference center. He was academic All-American a couple years. Yep. Really, really seminal player in TCU history. And he's got to be your best 54 of all time. I mean, pretty much, like, unless somebody wearing 54 ends up, like, winning the Heisman or being single hand. I mean, how can you ever pass up James Cash? You can't. You can't. So, 55. Got a lot more offensive linemen for you to chew on. Anthony Alibi, do you remember
him? I loved Anthony Alibi. Played for the Dolphins for a hot minute, too.
Yes, and now he's an actor, actually.
You can Is he really? Him.
Yeah, oh yeah. He's been on a couple of sitcoms.
You know, that sounds familiar now that you say that. That does sound real familiar.
Yeah, I mean, most recently I saw him in, they did a reboot of That's So Raven called Raven's Home, and he plays like the kid's coach, like in a few episodes in that. I think he's got another show on Netflix that he's in that's a sitcom that he's got more of a main role in.
He's looking good, too.
Yeah, oh yeah, he's slimmed down.
Family Reunion, he's an
episode. Family Reunion, yeah.
He's an episode of NCIS. He's an episode of Modern Family in 2015?
Oh, there you go.
Oh, man. Yeah, he's making a name for himself out there. Huh, good for him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, Anthony Alibi definitely deserves some mention. London Dunlap, he was a linebacker for the Frogs in the late 90s. Also, Goo Kennedy. He was a center for the Frogs 1970 and 71. You know, one of a few bright spots from that decade.
Dare we say the number one seed for best TCU all-name team?
Goo Kennedy? Yeah, probably. him and DeGreat, Simpson DeGreat.
Yes.
Also, Kyle Dooley. You got to give that Rose Bowl team some love. Dooley was an amazing guard on that offensive line.
I was thinking of another good name, Sir DeMarco Bledsoe.
Sir DeMarco. Well, you know, if you talk about him within the program, he's not very highly thought of.
Oh, no, but I'm thinking of names. Just thinking of names.
Yeah, just names. Yeah, Sir DeMarco, you can't. It's tough to beat. He's been knighted, you know. What if he actually did get knighted? He'd be Sir DeMarco Bledsoe. Sir DeMarco. but your best 55 of all time, and I'll give you one guess, Billy. Seen the list.
It's not I have seen the list, but also he's another current NFL offensive lineman.
Yeah,
flowing hair
with some gorgeous flowing locks.
Joey Hunt.
Joey Hunt, ladies and gentlemen, and a guy who like. You know, really, when he first came into TCU, because I was still there when he came, and you kind of look at him, and you don't think dominant offensive lineman when you look at him. You know, he looks kind of just like a not super tall. He just kind of looks like a cuddly, nice guy, you know, but he's a beast as a center.
I remember during his pro day, scouts were knocking him because he was short arms. He put up a crazy number of reps at the bench press. I want to say he got like 30-something of 225. And sounds like, oh, he's got short arms. It's too easy for him. Like, short arms, not good enough or whatever. And here he is several years. Was he in year five? And he's a starter now for the Seahawks, something like that? So
yeah, he's the guy
yeah.
at center for the Seahawks. Yep. So yeah, there's your number 55. That was my number in high school, actually. 55. Oh,
you
well, yeah.
We can put you as an honorable mention.
There we go. that's why Clint Foster 55 is my.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Clint underscore Foster 55. Okay. Follow me on Twitter.
I thought you looked really good for your age.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm actually, I got some like Benjamin Button thing going
on. Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Nice.
Or I could have said like I'm a high elf or a dwarf, I guess. I live like freakishly long. I'd be more of a dwarf. I'm pretty short.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway. I have no opinion on this one. I think I'll have to say some of those words right now.
Yeah, anyway. It's crickets immediately start chirping. So 56 for you now. Daryl Patterson is an honorable mention for you. 1979 to 1982, played linebacker for the Frogs in those years. James Cooper, center for the Frogs, 1944 and 45. But your best 56 of all time. Oh, another one, Chris Bradley. You got to mention Chris Bradley, defensive tackle for the Frogs on that 2017 team.
Yep.
Really strong player for the Frogs. But I think your best 56 of all time, you got to look at Tracy Simeon. He was a linebacker for the Frogs from 85 to 88. So they're in the late 80s, right after those suspensions came down from the Jim Wacker years. But this guy, he was an All-Southwest Conference linebacker in 1988 as a senior. He led the team in sacks and in tackles for loss that year with 4 and 15. And had 193 tackles in his entire career. So, you know. When you put them all together, he's all Southwest Conference. I think you got to give him the best 56.
Yes, I would agree.
Cool. 57. Now here, every single one of these guys is a defensive tackle. You got three great, great defensive tackles who have worn 57. First of all, you got to talk about Coach Zarnell Fitch.
Got to.
He was an awesome defensive tackle on that 2005 team and now has been a huge force in recruiting and a really, really great assistant coach who I hope never leaves TCU. He is amazing at what he does, and he was really great as a player. Corey Grant.
He got like an interception that got overturned or whatever.
Oh, yes, in the Houston Bowl.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes,
he did. I remember watching it. I was like, man, he should have had a pick, but it got flipped for whatever reason.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Zarnell Fitch, yeah. I mean, I almost hate putting him as an honorable mention. It's just that the guy who I'm giving it to, I feel like was a slightly better player. Corey Grant is another one. He's defensive tackle on that Rose Bowl team. And I mean, just another beast in the middle of that defensive line who was a really big reason why that 2010 defense was so good.
He still had two interceptions in 2005. Oh.
Well, there you go.
There you go. So maybe that one counted. I'm thinking of something else.
Maybe it did. I seem to remember, I feel like he did have an interception in the Houston
Bowl. Yeah.
Anyway.
All right, here we go.
But your best 57 of all time has to go to Davion Pearson. We were talking about him, I think, last week as a recruit out of Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. He was a really, really good defensive tackle. 2014, 2015 was his senior year, played in that Alamo Bowl. He came in as a freshman right as I was coming out. Really good dude as well. And did he play a half second in the NFL? Am I remembering that wrong?
I don't recall instantly, but maybe.
He probably got invited to a camp.
I'm sure he did.
But him and Chucky Hunter, playing next to each other was a sight.
Yeah, I don't think he got a call or anything in the NFL.
Okay, well, that's their loss because he was really, really good.
He's under all these prospect things and stuff like that. I don't think he actually got anywhere. Sadly.
Sadly, indeed.
Sadly,
because Davion, he was something special, and like I say, playing against Chucky Hunter on that 2014 defensive line, or say against with Chucky Hunter.
Zarnell Fitch did have a pick in the Iowa State game. You're right. The Houston Bowl.
Nice. Iowa State. Nice.
Nice.
Love it.
Was it him or GP that proposed like right before that game, right after that game to their wives?
Oh, shoot. I don't know. I was at that game.
I was too. But I'm just saying, I think one of them, I think that might have been right after GP married Mrs. P. I remember that it came up somehow recently with somebody. Well, now I feel like I'm just making stuff up. But
no, I believe you.
I think it's close to true. Okay. I'm sure GP did because Zarnell was a player then, not sure, because he's been with his wife a long time, but maybe not that long. But I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, I mean, Davion Pearson, he had in his senior year in 2015, he had 6.5 tackles for loss, 2 sacks, and 37 tackles on the year. Fumble recovery in that season as well. He was honorable mention All Big 12 in 2014 as a junior. Started all 13 games. 8 tackles for loss. 3.5 sacks. I don't know. I'm beginning to reconsider. Should we put Zarnell Fitch as the best 57 of all time? Just because of those interceptions? And I don't know. I feel like just watching Davion on tape, Davion was... People forget about how dominant he was in the interior of the line in his junior and senior season, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, and it's hard to look at stats for an interior defensive lineman and judge him purely on stats. I mean, I think eyeball test for me, that's why I'm shocked that he didn't get invited to a camp, because he was very good.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I'm trying to see when they got married.
Okay. I was like, you're looking up something important. I know. Okay. Well, I'm going to stick with Davion. I'm going to stick with my guys.
They got married in 2004.
So that would be a year before.
It would be a year before that.
Because that was, the Houston Bowl was New Year's Eve on 2005 New Year's Eve,
yes.
If I remember correctly.
So clearly nothing. So maybe I just made the whole thing up. Who knows?
Who knows?
All right, back to the list. Back to the topic.
Okay, so number 58 now we're looking at. I got two guys for you. One honorable mention and one...
Hey, another lineman that's currently in the NFL.
Do you know? Your honorable mention goes to LB Washington, who was, unironically, an LB for TCU. He was a linebacker from 81 to 84, with his senior season being that Blue Bonnet Bowl 84 team that was a real breakout team for the Frogs in that decade. Had 111 career tackles and one sack. But your best 58... got to go to Patrick Morris, like you were saying. We mentioned him earlier, member of what I truly believe to be the best TCU offensive line of all time. Mm-hmm. And he was just a mean son of a gun in the interior of that line, who could play guard or center. Most often played center. And the Frogs, didn't he briefly get injured, I believe?
Patrick Morris?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and when he did, the Frogs felt it.
The offensive line was terrible when he wasn't playing.
Yes. So there you go. That's his when you're talking about offensive linemen that so play as a unit, that's as much of an indication of just how valuable someone is as anything. Mm-hmm. You look at like the impact of Patrick Morris's departure on an offensive line, just like you look at the impact of Lucas Niang's departure on an offensive line. You see just how valuable they were and why he's your best 58 of all time. Shall we move on to 59?
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out this whole story that I might have made up, but I'm pretty sure it's true.
Yeah, you're deep in the research. Okay, so 59 now. Moving on, I got two more names for you. So your honorable mention 59 is going to be Terrence Maiden. All right, he played linebacker with the Frogs from 1997 to 2000. So again, those Franchione years and that Sun Bowl team that beat USC in 1998. He was part of one of the very first Coach Patterson defenses, the very first Coach Patterson defense in Fort Worth. And he was a huge piece of it. He was fourth in tackles on that team. That defense in 2000, by the way, that was a 10-2 season, led the nation in total defense and was really a hallmark of what was to come. So he's an honorable mention for you, but I feel like your best 59 of all time has to go to your two-time BYU transfer, Teo Fabelshay.
For his story alone, just because it's such a wild back-and-forth game of yo-yo between TCU and BYU, that's just confusing as all heck. But he was great. He got drafted third or fourth round by the Bears.
Yeah.
So TC put another offensive lineman in the NFL. What do you know?
Yeah, what do you know?
I'm noticing a trend for this episode.
Yeah, this is the offensive line appreciation episode.
They should be appreciated all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
This one especially. I mean, they're the most. I mean, I think they've become more important in the last decade or so. But for a while, I was like, man, offensive line, whatever. But I think last decade, it's become one of the more prominent positions in the NFL. Like, not even NFL, but all of football. They've really focused on the O-line.
Yeah, as it well should be.
It should be. Or maybe it's just because I'm noticing this as I learn more about football.
Yeah.
Maybe it's like, man, those guys are important. So we're playing Madden and be like, oh, yeah, I'm going to draft Mike Vick. I'm going to draft Antonio Brown. I'm going to draft, like, the best, like, Ty Gurley, best at everyone's position. I'll just pick up the O-line later when I do a fantasy draft. Yeah. It's the last five picks.
But without those guys, the whole thing falls apart, man. The whole, and very quickly, too. Now moving on to 60, our final number. And I feel like we've had really big finishes at these 10 numbers every week, but this one's not going to inspire a lot of strong feelings, I don't feel like.
Cold-blooded.
Yeah, well, just because of our young audience.
Yeah.
But your honorable mention goes to Ronnie Peoples. He was a tight end in the early 70s, one that my family has spoken fondly about in the past. Go-to guy for the Frogs at tight end. But your best 60 of all time goes to Steve Garmon. All right. He played for the Frogs in the early 60s, 61, 63, 64. And he was an all conference guard twice in 63 and 64. And Tommy Joe Crutcher, we've mentioned in the past. He was an All-American fullback for TCU. He was actually the last All-American for TCU until Kenneth Davis in the mid-80s. Oh. So you have like a 20-year stretch there of no All-Americans. And one of the reasons that Tommy Joe Crutcher was so good is he had Steve Garmon blocking for him. Also, there was all-conference halfback Jim Fover, I think is how you pronounce his name, who was playing on that team. But Steve Garmon was the team MVP in 1963. I mean, you have an All-American running behind him, but yeah. Steve Garmon's the team MVP. So there you go. He's your best 60 of all time.
We did have six offensive linemen right there, right? Yeah, six.
In that seven, 10 numbers? Seven.
I think seven of them are offensive linemen.
Wow. Seven. Seven. We're fixing to get into the offensive linemen numbers, you know, with the 50s, 60s, and 70s. We're going to have a lot of them.
Yeah, a lot of, and some defensive linemen and stuff like that, too.
Yeah, one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, yeah.
Man, this was the O-line appreciation episode.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Doesn't happen enough.
No, it doesn't happen. So back to people that appreciate things. Let's go to Twitter.
We appreciate Twitter questions,
you know? We do appreciate Twitter questions. I don't appreciate most of what happens on Twitter.
Yeah.
All right, Bayou City Frog, do you think the recent five-star recruitment makes an impact on recruiting the next few years? Yeah, because like you mentioned earlier, like it opens the door for five stars to take a deeper look, closer look. TCU's got a bunch of four stars on campus, and been in the running for a lot of four stars late. So it's never a bad thing to get a five star.
Yeah, somebody's got to be first.
Someone's got to be first.
Zach Evans was first, so let's have some more. An early signing day coming up soon. Come on now.
Well, yeah, I think with more with December signing days, and is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm saying more like just because Zach Evans was such a like, oh my gosh, like he just came out of nowhere, you know?
For
like,
real.
Like let's have someone that's like they've committed to TCU hashtag AGTG, you know? And like we've got it, we're ready.
To 20.
Yeah.
Is it just me, or does the recruiting trend make just as, if not a greater, impact on future potential coaches and the future of the program? Yeah, I think it has a lot to do with that because whatever you're building, whatever players you have, obviously if you have better players, your odds are you win better.
Yeah. believe it or not.
As it basically goes, for example, whenever GP retires, it seems like the facilities, uniforms, et cetera, this is really setting conditions for bigger hires and making it easier for anyone coming in. Yeah, of course. I think it's if you have better players, you're more likely to win. If you win more, you recruit better and you get better facilities and more money and better coaches want to come be there and stuff like that. Yeah.
Coach P's established an unreal foundation. Unreal. And, you know, you have to wonder, I mean, we've talked about this in the past with like Paul Gonzalez, like is his eventual replacement going to come from within the program or are we going to go for some hire from outside? That's going to be interesting to see in a few years.
It will be interesting in a few years. I still think it comes from within.
That's what I would ideally like because you want to keep the same culture going, you know?
That's why people are sleeping on Paul Gonzalez. I still like that call. I like that call by me.
I would not be mad about that at all.
Bayou City again. Why are we all assuming TCU's offense is not going to change? Seems like people are more pissed off about 2019 and the fact that there are like 9 months between seasons. I mean, we haven't given them a chance yet. That sounds like a subtweet for sure.
Yeah.
No, they're going to change. They're going to do something. Like we said, when 2014... they brought in a whole bunch of new ideas and new phases. Why can't that happen again this year?
Yeah, I mean, if you think Coach P is a fool, you, sir, are the fool. Like, he knows what this team needs. He's a football genius. Like, after 2013 happened, what did he do? He's like, I need to make drastic changes. He makes it happen, right? And in 2014, we see those drastic changes. I think that there's any number of circumstances that could have led to the last couple years of offensive turmoil is the word I'm looking for. But I think bringing Meacham back and bringing in Jerry Kill to now give the offense more autonomy, in a sense, I think it's going to be huge. I think you're going to see the changes that you need to have for this to be a competent offense.
So I'm just looking at, I agree 100% with all of that. I was just going through Twitter, and I've seen a lot of appreciation for the Peach Bowl team all of a sudden. Not going to say it's because we did our graphic thing, but whatever.
Yeah.
TCU football just pointed out that there were that team in that game. TCU allowed 9 rushing yards, 5 sacks, 4 turnovers, and 3 points.
Oh man, that's beautiful.
And now a bunch of players from that team are chiming in their memories and stuff like that. Ranthony just put out a couple pictures from the field and stuff. So great. That game was amazing.
It was incredible. I went back and watched it the other day, actually.
Did you? Oh, you finally did because you said you hadn't for a while.
Yeah. So I went back and watched it. And, you know, it is funny. Like, I mean, it was utter dominance. But there in the first half, it was a little – we were making a lot of mistakes in the first half of that game.
It wasn't. We weren't
But great. They were just completely inept against our defense.
Well, I said we weren't great. We were absolutely phenomenal. But yes, there were what, two? We turned the ball over a couple times. Yeah. It wasn't like the best game.
Well, and the broadcasters mentioned it that like they're like, we came in talking about TCU's offense, but it's TCU's defense that is ruling the day. Yeah. Like just absolutely suffocating Ole Miss. They couldn't do anything.
Just take that. Was it Bo Wallace? Was that their quarterback at
yeah,
the time?
Bo
was
Wallace.
All the hype. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sad Bo.
They actually had two. I didn't realize that Evan Ingram, the Giants tight end, he was on that Ole Miss team.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. I bet he didn't do much that day.
No, he didn't.
Just going to go on a limb.
He did not. That's why I didn't remember.
And say he didn't do a whole lot at all.
They showed him on the sideline before the game, talking about, like, this is a huge weapon that they have. I was like, oh, I know him from fantasy football.
That's cute. and then last from Bayou City, do we think it's really a philosophy thing or that I was really the scheme and performance of 18-year-olds and an underperforming offensive line? Combo.
Yeah.
It's a combo.
It's a little bit of both.
I think the O-line wasn't good most of last year. They were also, I mean, some of them were really young, and Lucas Niang getting hurt didn't help at all. And Cordell was not 100% till the second half of the year anyway. So, I think it all played a factor in that. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. And, of course, a freshman quarterback's going to make mistakes. But then again, too, you also do have to bear in mind what your players are. And as Jerry Kill said, put them in positions to succeed, mm-hmm. which I don't think always happened.
Our boy Parker is set to war, so we don't want Bama now?
rewind and listen to
I said we want Bama. I said I still want Bama, but less than I did before I started writing that thing yesterday.
There you go.
And then Gerard at Black Mist asked earlier, how much will a player like Zach Evans change our win-loss columns at the end of 2020? Again, I think it depends on who you play in week three, how many games there are, when they're played. I still think this is going to be an 8 or 9 win team.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean,
so maybe it makes you a hard 9.
Yeah, I would. You would think that if Zach Evans is who we think he is, you'd have to think that's worth a win.
They are who we thought they were.
Yeah, that's what I want to be able to say at the end of this. He was who we thought he was.
Andrew Otis, are we surprised we landed a 5-star offensive player before a 5-star defensive player?
Oh, that's a good point.
A little bit. A little bit, but you were talking about Braden Smith earlier, was the offensive lineman who was really close to coming here. And then Baron Browning was a linebacker who I think should have come here.
Yeah.
I think there were other factors in play in that.
Was Andrew Billings a 5-star? I don't remember. Or was he a 4-star?
Ooh, what was he? Because
he was close.
Super close.
I remember.
I mean, that was a minute-by-minute thing.
I remember the day that it came down that he had, you know, decommitted or he ended up going to Baylor, and the attitude around the coaching staff was quite miffed.
Yeah, he was only a 4-star on Rivals, but he was real good.
Yeah. No doubt. I think he's still in the league, right?
I think he's bouncing around somewhere, yeah.
Yeah, he was with the Bengals for a while.
The Bengals for a long time. But yeah, I'm a little surprised he got a running back before a linebacker or defensive end or whatever. Again, they were real close on Myles Garrett, too.
Yeah.
That was another one. That they were really close on, so... And Fields was also really highly rated, too.
Fields was a 4-star, yeah.
But almost 5, but...
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, you know, we have all these almost 5-stars that commit to TCU and suddenly magically become 4-stars.
Oh, yeah. No, it's
I mean, true. Justin Rogers, like, was practically a 5-star. I mean, I don't know
and everyone, how. And when I said it the first, everyone was like, Justin Rogers, no. He was a 4-star on Rivals.
Yeah.
But like, we would have been a 5 went somewhere else. He also broke his leg his first game of senior year.
I mean, I think he was a 4-star on 24/7, too. I don't think even their... Maybe for one fleeting moment at some point he was a 5-star, but certainly never while he was committed to us.
Fun fact, Evans is rated higher on Rivals than 247. He's not a 5-star on 247.
Is that right?
He is by their composite. He's a 4-star on 247.
Oh.
5-star because Rivals and ESPN both have him up there.
Yeah, well, because ESPN, he was the number one recruit in the whole nation for a while.
Yeah, he was like ended up being number 13.
Which Rivals. Still just like... boggles my mind that we got the number one recruit in the nation.
Number one running back in the country is coming here. Get excited, folks.
Oh, man.
B Banks, 21-21. Obviously, it's great that we got Evans, but what position would you most like to have seen us nab a 5-star in this last class?
In this last class?
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you're just talking about any time, I would say quarterback. But
yes, for this last class, I would say linebacker, someone to go with Wallo, or cornerback.
I would
mostly because I am in love with Justin Flo, who's going to Oregon. That linebacker is an absolute monster.
Mm-hmm.
Very excited to see what he's going to do in a few years.
See, you have a specific person in mind.
I have a specific player. I thought Flo was the best player in the entire country.
Though. I don't have any specific players in mind, but just devoid of context, I would say for this next season, I would have loved to have had a 5-star either on the offensive line, like interior offensive line, specifically because we got those two grad transfers, or... Or linebacker, I think you're right. Linebacker would be a great one to have someone play next to Wallo and then take that role going forward. Not to say that we don't have great linebackers.
Oh, no. But like, if you could have someone for certain, because I think it's a question mark next to Wallow. It's still.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, is it going to be Jamoy Hodge? Is it going to be the Harris? Yeah, I was I can't remember his first name.
Is it going to be Ben Wilson?
Yeah, yeah. Yes. You've got good guys who can develop, but, you know, a five-star, you know, if he's a sure thing,
yeah,
you can just plug and play.
Plug and play. Do coaches ever look at the huddle films that kids tweet at them? Yes. I think less, like, I think they have a board, like they know who's good, who they want, who they don't want, and as much work as GP and company do years in advance, they pretty much no one really sneaks by them. Again, it was like Chuba Hubbard, whatever, from the running back from Canada.
But he didn't.
Huh?
We were in on him, weren't
TCU
we?
TCU was the first team to offer. Yeah. I'm saying he's a guy that TCU found first.
Yeah.
Like TCU finds all these guys usually first or second that most people don't find. So the kids that are like, please look at me, coach, in their class of 2020s or 2021s, you're too late.
Yeah.
Like if you're class of 2023s and you're sending your film in, more of a chance.
Mm-hmm.
But I think by now it's too late. They know what their board is.
How on earth does a rational human being choose to go to Stillwater, Oklahoma over Fort Worth, Texas?
What's his face is awfully rich.
Well, what's his face is awfully dead too.
Well, he is now, but he wasn't then. But also to make that Canadian dollars is even less money. How much is a Yuppie worth?
We'll pay you in loonie.
Loonies, yeah, those loonies and toonies or whatever they're called. Get out of here, Canada. All right, last question from Brian Banks. Rank the following: Queso, walk off home runs, the first week with a new smartphone.
Okay, first week of a new smartphone is last.
I hate that so much.
Yeah,
it's so confusing.
Queso and walk off home runs, man. Dang, that's a tough one. They're so two different things, you know.
Give me a walk-off home run because I miss baseball.
Yeah.
I had Queso like 2 years ago.
You haven't been watching KBO, man? Speaking of walk-off, the Dinos, my Dinos had a walk-off just the other day.
I'm concerned now because they had a spike in cases again and they might be shutting down again.
Oh, no.
I'm just saying. I hate to break it to you, but they haven't announced anything, but I'm saying like it's a possibility right now.
Can we just...
But give me walk-off home runs, then Queso.
Herd immunity, then Queso.
First week of the new smartphone is very difficult because I don't know how anything works. I don't know what my apps are.
I never get a new smartphone.
I'm just an old man.
I'm a few behind.
This is a more recent one. The one I have now is a more recent phone. I think it's a 10. Yeah, it's a 10. I can look at it and it opens. So it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Nice. Anyone to talk about this week?
Well, I didn't actually choose. I'm gonna go ahead and choose specifically Torchy's Queso, then walk off home.
Torchy's a solid Queso.
Yeah.
I'll go Homer's, then Queso.
Yeah.
Then New Week of the Smartphone. All right, guys. Thank you for listening again this week. Had Austin this week. Hopefully, we're gonna get Chris Gardner next week to brag about his prognostications because he's a soothsayer, if you will.
Yeah.
Check out Purple Menace. Zach Evans has got me motivated. I've been predicting 5 stars. I've been got us talking BAM and all that stuff. So check out ProMinutes.com and see what's going on for the Frogs right now.
@Clint_Foster55. Follow me on Twitter.
@BillyWessels @Scoop_it on the Instagram.